Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jamie, what's recording backwards?
Recording backwards is Gnidrakur.
Lore boys here, and we have nearly completed our journey from this earthly plane to the kingdom of heaven. My name is Peter O'Donoghue, and I am joined with...
Coming at you live from Purgatorio, it's Ethan. So I moved to Purgatory because we talked about it last time, and I was like, well, there's two options, Hell or Purgatory. Hell sounded not so great. Purgatory didn't sound great, but I was like, it's better than Hell, and those are my only two options, so I'm going to go there. So I'm happy with my choice. I'm sure nothing in the near future is going to make me upset that I didn't choose, I don't know, some sort of hypothetical third option.
I mean, you're going to be really upset that your real estate agent really cucked you on that one. Like,
No.
I got some very important information.
I got my place in Purgatory for a steal. The only payment I have to do is I can't look backwards. I have to only look forwards.
And I'm James Miller, the patron saint of processing wheat.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
And James Miller, what's that backwards?
Relim Samaj.
That just sounds like a regular guy from like India.
Okay.
Yeah.
That just sounds like a normal name.
Police officer's pretty good. Recipho Isolop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Tim Hortons, not Romit.
Yeah, and you could do the whole like always fresh Tim Hortons. A surf seal loss, not Romit.
Yeah. I think we've done this before. That's
very
sounds familiar.
In our off time, for sure.
This is a callback to Jamie and me in high school. Another guy, Will.
Not much to do in a small town except for drive around and read signs backwards.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, that's true. Van Cleek Hill, baby. It's the cultural center of the country, I think.
Uh-huh. That's what I hear.
All right. So before we move on, Ethan, since you're moving there, you want to recap as best you can Dante's Purgatorio.
Yeah, there's like, it's kind of nice. So, like I said, I can't look backwards, which is kind of inconvenient because I'm pretty sure I moved here with my girlfriend, but I haven't heard from her since. So, you know, but we're walking up this hill. It's pretty great. At the end of each of the hills. When I first got there, they carved 7 scratches in my head. Which is kind of, it sucks, but it's like, you know, homeowners associations, you know what you have to deal with. It's like, you know, I got to keep my grass a certain length. I got to let them carve 7 notches into my forehead.
It looks kind of cool, to be honest. I got to say, it looks really good on you.
Yeah, well, I had them do it in a 7-sided star pattern, which I thought was pretty nice of them that they were accommodating at least that much. But it's nice because when you walk forward far enough, there's a nice pretty angel that removes a mark from your head, and then each time you get that done, you see a little bit more of her.
All right, pretty good, pretty good. Jamie, you want to recap Dante's Inferno?
There's this place called Hell. And it's like pretty hot down there. It sucks.
Oh, no.
It's where you go when you're bad. And depending on how bad you were or what your sin was, you go to a different level of it. You start off with like some normal stuff like lust. Like then like you go lower and lower. You get stuff like fraud, where there's like people whipping you and making jokes at you while you're in a pile of lava or something. And then once you get all the way down to the bottom, there's Satan's balls, and it's the center of the earth.
Yeah, right? That's where they store the gravity, as we established a couple of weeks ago.
Gravity is stored in the balls.
Yeah,
it's stored in the balls.
Really, really, Hell is what happens that's what happens when you don't have the homeowners association to back you up. Okay, so I'll say.
Okay, yeah, it's the virtuous homeowners with no association.
What's like, homeowners? What's that backwards? Homeowners association.
Oh my god.
No, that was
now. Before we get into Dante's Paradiso, I do want to open here with an email that I very much liked. I like these types of very short, silly emails. So, Jamie, if you want to take it away with the email that we got from our buddy Dalton, who I believe is in Texas. Don't mess with Texas. Check in on Texas.
Yeah. Tools. Yeah.
So Dalton sent in an email titled Lore Folk Question. And here's the, I'll read the email and then we can answer the questions after, I guess. So Dalton says, hey guys, hope y'all are staying sane during these weird times. I just had a few questions for anyone who wants to answer. One, have you experienced burnout while making these podcasts? Y'all seem to genuinely enjoy what you do, but it must be hard at times to find the motivation to keep going after this long. True, sometimes, and we'll get to that. And then two, would you rather have to poop out a watermelon or pee out a golf ball? Thought-provoking questions, I know, but they're questions that people need to know. Keep up the great podcast, guys. So first of all, guys, have you ever experienced burnout?
I mean, yeah, we definitely have. In season two, like the end of season two to the start of season three was like a big period where all three of us were just like busy with life. And like this seemed like a lot of work for we weren't getting the satisfaction out of it that we wanted. And we all just took a big break from doing this for like out of 5 weeks. I think we released one episode or something like that, like in the middle. Yeah.
I think before we like got it down to a science and like figured out our format and how long we want them to be and stuff like that, there were a lot more strenuous. Like when the 3-hour episodes, dude, you're exhausted after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so drunk.
Yeah, exactly. I've taken a couple weeks off. Whenever I said this isn't fun, I take a week off and I come back and I'm always enjoying myself when we're here.
Exactly.
So.
I've definitely burned out as well. Either just because sometimes it can be exhausting for me. Mostly it was like external forces. Like I had a funeral to deal with and I was generally already depressed and not at my office for a little while. So there was like, there's still some missing artwork on the website, like 5 or 6 episodes that I just could not muster the willpower to actually do. And then, yeah, we have 2 seasonal breaks. We have 3 seasons and we took breaks in between. I think the first one was because it just sounded like a good idea. And then the other one was, it was just like mental exhaustion.
Yeah, exactly. The first one, we were at episode 20 and we all needed the next week off anyway.
Yeah.
Like it just kind of all worked for us. So we all just said like, oh, let's just like take it off. And then the end of season 2. So maybe like, and I haven't gone back and listened to any of our own podcasts. I wonder if you get to the end of season 2, if you go back and listen and it's like you can hear the fatigue or strain in our voice. I don't know.
Yeah, Pete, you said funeral and it reminded me of something. There's this place that whenever we had to drive to my dad's office, there was like a place that made caskets. And on their sign, they said, we put the fun in funeral, which I felt was so inappropriate.
Very inappropriate.
That sounds like a Simpsons business.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Put it in H.
And the second question, I guess, would you rather poop out a watermelon or pee out a golf ball?
I'd poop out a watermelon.
Poop out a watermelon.
It sounds way easier.
No.
They
both sound horrible, but yes. I feel like pooping out a grapefruit is horrible. So, yeah. Like, the difference between a grapefruit and a watermelon is negligible to me. You've torn everything at that point. You know what I mean?
What's the diameter of a watermelon?
Well,
I mean, it depends on the
vary.
Size of the watermelon, right?
Yeah. Are we talking seedless here?
I mean, like, 10
Japanese
to 12 inches.
Cube ones?
10 to 12 inches. How far can a human anus open?
I think 10 to 12 inches. Exactly.
All right, if it's 9 to 11, I'm going to be really upset.
up to 12 centimeters. So it says...
12 centimeters.
12 That's centimeters is under 6 inches.
Or a third, yeah.
Yeah. When I looked it up right after, it said raccoons could squeeze into spaces 10 centimeters wide.
That was a meme for a while. Was
right,
the average human can fit 2 raccoons up his butt or something like that.
Okay. So, yeah, I don't really need to look up a human pee hole, but it would definitely be a challenge, too. If it was, like, lasting damage forever, it might be better to go with the penis. I don't know.
No way, dude.
No way.
Well, do you have to get a big butt plug all the time? I feel like you're not going to just pee all the time.
You'd get a colostomy bag.
Yeah.
Oh.
And you just have the bag.
You know what? To mix it up, I'll pee the golf ball just so we have some science here.
Yeah,
and
just
we can figure
so
it out.
We can actually trial it.
Sure. Yeah,
the good news is...
I'm not using this thing anyways.
Well, the good news is you now have a golf ball that you can reuse. Nobody's eating that watermelon.
True.
Well, you don't need the rind. If it doesn't break open, it's still technically good.
Peter, I'm not eating that watermelon.
You know what? The night before you poop it out, make a little hole in it, pop a vodka bottle into it, and you have such a lovely watermelon by the time you poop it out.
Yeah, exactly. Jeez. Nice boozy watermelon.
Anyway.
Boozy booty watermelon.
It is these types of silly questions that I do like to listen to on other podcasts and I like to get. If you guys have lore suggestions, why don't you head over to our Discord, where we're all hanging out all the time and recording.
Wait, Peter,
right now.
We have a Discord?
If you guys want to find it, the easiest way to get to it, loreboys.com, and then you can find the in our info section.
Yeah, exactly.
There's an about section. I tried to make a URL slug for it. Surprisingly difficult. I talked to Big Game where I was like, this is going to be fucking easy, my guys. But loreboys.com/about with a trailing slash, and you guys will get all of the links to all our stuff there.
And last week, channel for lore anyway, so.
Yeah, last week we had all three boys in a Minecraft channel with some fans, and we were playing in the Minecraft server together, so you're missing out on stuff like that if you're not in there.
That was also fucking hilarious.
That was some wacky, goofy fun from all of us.
Yeah. We built Peter a house, filled it with pumpkins and chickens. I tried to kill Ethan a lot, but he even tried to kill me, actually.
No, I would say, I think you had it right the first time. You did try and kill me a lot, but...
Well, I tried to trap you. You just tried to punch me, but I had a diamond sword, so it never worked out well for you.
You had diamond sword and diamond armor, and I hit you with iron pants.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, that's what you're missing over there. And now we can move on to the episode. And again, if you want to contact us, loreboyspodcast@gmail.com. Normally those are read at the end of the episode. So you have to sit through a bunch of bullshit before you hear your own words.
Can I just say, Peter, you missed the perfect segue of without further ado, because we're talking about God and parody. So anyway.
Can I say it now?
Is French for God.
Yeah. Adieu is to God.
To God.
And ado is without further ado.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, when we last left our intrepid self-insert, Dante Alighieri, he was resting one last time at the top of the Mountain of Purgatory after jumping through a horny wall of fire, which was intended, the quote is, to drain the lust from his balls, is a direct quote.
It's a direct quote.
Right? It is not.
Just drain the old man tank, huh? Just get it out there. Just a bunch of people just like jumping through fire and splooging all over the top of Mount Purgatory.
It's got to be very stimulating.
I mean, you'd think. But it was, if I recall correctly, they had to jump through multiple times, right? They were like hopscotching through it? Yeah.
Exactly. They kind of like double dutch through the wall of fire, and they have to like... prostrate to themselves and talk about the sin of lust before they're cleansed, and then they can go up to heaven. It's all in the episode. Go listen to Purgatorio from a couple weeks ago.
Peter, why make God fucking so good if you don't like it?
Because you have to control yourself. We will talk about temperance coming up here and self-restraint, which is very important.
Good. I hope so. I hope someone will teach me the self-restraint to not buy a house in a diminishing neighborhood.
Yeah, on a shitty, boring island. So, Dante, Virgil, and Statius, his poet homies that he's been traveling with now, continue up the mountain until they meet a woman named Matilda. It is still to this day debated who this is supposed to represent.
It's like the movie, Peter. Come on.
They do find a VHS copy of Matilda, but there's VCR. Yeah, it's true. He's the stepdad or whatever the fuck.
And the director.
Oh. Man. It's a Roald Dahl novel. Just remember, everybody, Roald Dahl hates your fucking kids.
All right.
So much. But the Matilda in this is still in Purgatorio is likely Matilda of Tuscany, the ruler of Tuscany from 1052 to 1115. She's actually one of the few medieval women who is famous for her military might. And Loreboy's canon, warrior queens of Christ, are rad as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, I'd give it to her.
Oh, yeah, dude. She could squat Jamie or whatever he wants women to do to him.
Shot put.
That's it.
It doesn't need to be a woman. It could be anyone. I just need someone who's strong enough to shot put me.
Yeah. Okay. I'll see. Maybe I could do it one day. I eat like shit and... gyms are closed, but maybe I'll do that for your birthday, for your 35th.
Okay. You gotta get me over a chain link fence, though. That's what happened in the dream. So really work on your pushing strength.
All right, give me time.
How tall was the chain link fence, though? Because the material of the fence doesn't really matter as much as the height of the fence.
That's like eight foot. I don't know. What's a that normal is, one?
8 foot is a very tall chain link fence.
Yeah, that's like... Are they trying to keep people in or keep people out with that?
Taller than me for sure.
Because you sometimes you get like the 3.5-4 foot ones that are just like, that's like a gate, you know?
No, it was next to a football field in St. Lazare.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we'll go with 8 foot, but it's gonna be you're diminishing your own pool here.
In St. Lambert, we can go find the fence actually, so it's fine.
So sadly, we're not going to talk about St. Lazare or St. Lambert in this episode, but okay. I'm sure they're relevant in some way. Matilda of Tuscany was the primary supporter of Pope Gregory VII when he got into a bit of a scuffle with King Henry IV of the Holy Roman Empire in what was going to be called the Investiture Controversy. This is where the Pope had been undercutting the power of the Emperor and other European monarchs. This is kind of a branding thing. This was less of a controversy and really closer to 5 decades of civil war in Germany. And then it actually ended up giving rise to the Guelph and the Ghibelline conflict, which we have been over multiple times. Yeah. Exactly.
Which Dante was against the Guelphs, right?
Dante, okay, he was a Guelph.
Oh, he was for the Guelphs, okay.
And then after they lost, they separated into 2 mini Guelphs, and he was he basically was a loser Guelph twice. Is and then he got exiled. Then he got exiled.
Like,
remember?
Fuck you! I'm writing a 1,300-page book. Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. But since Dante was a huge simp for the papacy, it is no surprise that he would put Matilda at the top of the mountain of purgatory in earthly paradise or the Garden of Eden.
Is what a 2020 spin on fucking Dante.
Yeah, I know.
Is the P in simps, does that stand for Pope?
Yes. Simp is actually old Italian.
Yeah. Simp actually stands for simping in my Pope.
Yeah, it's an acronym.
it's a recursive acronym.
Yeah. Sucker for mediocre Pope or something, I don't know. What is the actual one?
Matilda's job here in the Garden of Eden is to get Dante ready for his big date, with Beatrice and God. So she's fixing his bow tie, straightening out his corsage, and combing his greasy, greasy hair off to the side to make him look, you know, classic 80s prom crap.
Right. He's flashing those brown, brown teeth of his.
Oh, yeah,
dude.
It's
the fucking 1300s and nobody has a toothbrush.
Because it was 1317 probably when he wrote this part.
Yeah.
Make sure you got my good side with the wooden tooth.
Yeah. Have you seen pictures of Dante? He has like a hooked crow's beak of a nose.
No.
Like it basically starts between his eyebrows and just goes straight down and like bends forward over his lip.
Wow.
Yeah. Not a good looking man.
Wait, were you looking at a picture of Dante or were you looking at a picture of a parrot? I often get confused myself.
Oh, that's true.
The parrots, what's confusing about them is the parrots speak like a human.
And this is called Paradiso. So,
oh, Paradiso.
All about birds.
You guys know when a parrot dies and its skull, it's oh no, I'm thinking of a toucan, never mind. But a toucan's beak stays the same. Like it's still that colorful beak and then with just a little bird skull next to it whenever you find
it. Oh, it doesn't like lose its color?
No, it's still just like a toucan.
That's like that's gonna change the way I eat Fruit Loops.
Yeah, I was gonna say that's a great like Halloween cover for a box of Fruit Loops.
Yeah, but imagine finding one and you know nothing about like how the world works and stuff like way back when, and you find one of those things.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it sounds like a tacky souvenir you would buy in South America from like an American run pop shop or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, Beatrice arrives. Now, we talked more about Beatrice in the first episode when we're talking about the real life Dante, so go back and listen to that. As Beatrice arrives, Virgil and Statius disappear. Due to Virgil being a virtuous pagan, he has to get his kind, helpful, however uncivilized non-Christian ass back down to hell where he belongs.
Get down to hell, motherfucker.
Out.
But what about Statius? He was making his way through purgatory.
So I'm not certain what happens to him in this part of the story. I looked for a lot of, like, because he just poofs out of existence along with Virgil. Neither one of them carry up into paradise with Dante and Beatrice.
Okay.
Damn.
Well, maybe Virgil makes sense because he's not Christian, but Statius was like baptized apparently.
Statius, they found him at the last level jumping through the horny fire, right?
I don't think he was in lust, but he was in purgatory making his way up the mountain to heaven. Okay.
Maybe it's just like he got like a little sneak peek with Dante because Dante is the Mary Sue. Like Dante could bring him through purgatory, but he hasn't actually done his time. You know, if you do the crime, you got to do the time. That's what
you got to do the time. Yeah, it's three times however sinful you were.
Exactly. Dude, you should be a poet. That's a really cool line you just came up with.
Oh, thank you. I actually a Bill Shakespeare. So.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. King Lear, I think. Yeah, a Billy Shakes. King Lear, I think. My horse, my horse, my kingdom for a horse.
What? I like the accent you put on that one. That was good. Yeah.
Well, that's a Bill Shakespeare accent.
Okay.
Yeah, a Billy Shakes accent, if you will. Yeah.
Got it.
So Dante and Matilda witness a procession, which is just like a organized caravan of people. I can only really describe this as dreamlike because, again, I went to multiple sources and what they see in the Garden of Eden here is fucking wild. And everything just gets weird, just gets more psychedelic from here on out.
Well, you say they're in the Garden of Eden. Did you say that before just then or?
Yes. Earthly paradise, the Garden of Eden.
Okay.
When I said that Matilda was here.
Oh, way back when.
Yeah, exactly. So I can't corroborate any like shape-shifting chariots or anything to that effect. So just let's get through it here. Just imagine now a four-year-old Dante out of breath explaining this entire thing to his grandparents. Okay, so the procession is led by 24 elders, representing the 24 books of the Hebrew Bible. Four animals, representing Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the four evangelists follow them. Next, Beatrice arrives and or gets onto a chariot pulled by a griffin. She is being circled by three women representing love, hope, and faith. Behind them, there are four more women representing prudence, temperance, justice, and fortitude. And then two more elders representing the Acts of the Apostles and the letters of Paul from the New Testament. Okay. Then four modestly dressed people representing James, Peter, John, and Jude, the author of the seven Catholic epistles.
Got two out of the three of the boys there.
Yeah. And then finally, an old man shuffling along representing the book of Revelations.
His name was Ethan.
So it's like Connie is short for Constance. Did they call temperance like Temi?
Tempe?
Tempe.
Tempe. Yeah. Tempe. That's why they serve tempeh in Catholic churches as an alternative to the Eucharist if you're a vegetarian.
Oh yeah, it's temperance, yeah exactly. Yeah. Some tempeh. So this procession arrives, and Virgil disappears kind of at this point, like without fanfare. He does not say goodbye. He does not tell Dante good luck. Tell God I said hi, whatever, let me into heaven and shit for all the work I just did. He just vanishes.
It's okay. And so I know you did the research on it and maybe listened to the audiobook, but was Virgil's leaving described at all, or is that just like the last mention of Virgil in the book or the poem?
No. So Dante does notice, and there is a solution to this problem, which I will get into in a moment here. So now here's where this procession itself is kind of normal looking. It's like a parade with a griffin in it, which is whatever. Every parade needs a float. Now the griffin that is pulling Beatrice's chariot pulls it over to a dead tree that's in the Garden of Eden. When he ties the chariot to the tree, it springs back to life and bears fruit. Turns out this is the tree of knowledge that Adam and that lying bitch Eve ate from to invent menstrual cramps or whatever.
Whatever.
Huh? The crowd from the procession then surrounds the griffin and starts like applauding at it, congratulating him on not eating from the tree of knowledge.
Okay. Oh my God.
A dragon that represents Islam shows up apparently at one point.
And there was a dragon. There was a griffin, and he went up, and someone tied him to the tree, but they didn't eat the fruit. And then everybody clapped for them, and then a dragon showed up, and the dragon was Islam.
Yeah, exactly. And now this is also like kind of cool because, like, despite the fact he's pretty hardcore Christian, we know since he put King Saladin, who fought against the Christians in the Crusades, in. Mm-hmm. hell because he's non-Christian, but in limbo, so he's virtuous. He's a virtuous pagan. Dante's not anti other religions, or at least parts of it, right? So that's
not anti other religion insofar as he can accept that some misguided soul can follow another religion and be a good person, but anybody that follows that religion instantly forfeits their right to paradise.
Paradise and or purgatory. Like, you can't even be redeemed.
So I don't know. I don't know if I would say pro other religions, but
it's a comedy though, right? So does he necessarily believe that all of these layers of hell and all the layers of going up to heaven exist, or?
Yeah, it's traditional. Allegorical. It's a traditional comedy. So comedy was literally something that any story. There was two types of stories back in the day: tragedies and comedies. Tragedies had sad endings, and comedy was anything that didn't have an explicitly sad ending.
Yeah.
It wasn't a slapstick, like, here goes Dante up the hill of purgatory.
Yeah, I know. But is he, like, really religious? Does he say that anywhere?
Dude, he would probably fuck the Pope if he had the chance. Yeah.
Very, very pro-papacy was not
right. Yeah, hardcore papacy, yeah.
Super, super, super religious, you might say.
Yeah.
But I think most people in the 1300s were. It was just, I don't know what you did.
Do religion, is the goal of religion to fuck the Pope? I don't get it.
Yeah? That's how
he's the last boss.
That's the last boss in Christianity. That's when you win Christianity, you fuck the Pope.
You just get beamed up immediately.
Well, so like, I'm
straight to the Vatican.
You guys know me. I'm like an agnostic at best. But the second that there's a hot Pope, then I'm going for it. Then, you know, I'm just biding my time until there's a hot Pope that I can fuck.
Dude.
You go as the Pope?
Glass wagon. You can go in that glass wagon and just steam it right up.
Oh, it's like Titanic.
nothing but the handprints and the Pope's chest prints up against the glass.
So, more crazy shit happens towards the end of the procession here. A giant shows up after the dragon, along with a prostitute. The prostitute represents the corruption of the church. She and the giant embrace and then leave together, possibly with the chariot.
They just show up to grab the chariot and leave?
They show up, hug, and leave.
Okay, does anybody clap for them? Or?
No, apparently the only person getting credit for not eating from the tree is the griffin. The griffin might be Jesus. That's another thing.
The giant shows up and everyone's just like, where's David? And then
So Beatrice has gotten off of the chariot. She walks over to talk to Dante. She expresses disapproval of Dante's sins and then explains to him why Virgil poofed out of existence. But then she's like, don't worry about it. Swim through the river Lethe, which is the river of forgetfulness that we detailed last episode.
Not to be confused with the river of Leche, which is the river of milk.
No, that is a different river in the Garden of Eden. That's where God invented milk.
It
pours over the walls of a mountain.
Yeah. On the third day, God said, let there be milk, and the river Leche flowed.
There was a river espresso, and they actually meet at one point and make...
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
A nice cafe latte.
A little flower. Yeah.
The river cafe latte. Like.
The cappuccino lake in the Garden of Eden is a sight to behold. I must say. So the Lethe being the river of forgetfulness, he swims through it, forgets about Dante, forgets about his sins, forgets about everything. So now that he's forgotten his sins, he's ready to ascend into paradise and then eat Jesus's famous hot wings and leave with a t-shirt, presumably.
That is the second goal after you, that's the true ending to Christianity.
Yeah.
You can fuck the Pope, but then it's like you also can, if you unlock all the unlockables, then you can ascend to heaven and eat Jesus's chicken wings and leave with a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Jesus is
probably really good.
Yeah. His robe's so white and like clean. I just picture it with like little fingerprints of like chicken
and buffalo sauce all over him. Yeah.
Welcome. Sit down. Yeah.
And he's got a gallon of milk from the river Leche because they're very spicy, those chicken wings.
Some people say that Jesus is the only man who's ever lived who can finish that gallon of milk challenge.
Yeah. Could Jesus himself make a chicken wing so hot even he couldn't eat it?
Oh.
Wow. Only one way to find out.
At noon, the procession is done and all the weird transforming rituals and giants and dragons and griffins are all taken care of. So Dante and Beatrice decide...
Islam's gone from heaven.
Yeah, it's finally out of here. Dante grabs a quick shot of water from the river Unoe to restore his positive memories, and then they're finally off. Unoe is an original river created by Dante, derived from the Greek words for good and mind.
Oh,
so it's not like one of the underworld. It's not one of the underworld ones that he's just recycled into his poem. He was just like, ah, fuck, I need one more river, and underworld's fresh out. And the milk one's kind of gross. It's going to be a long walk. It's going to get hot.
Yeah, that's all. That name is also what you say at the beginning of In the Jungle, that song. Inuit.
Well, that's why you can remember that song so well.
It's good mind. I know we already had our animal fact of the episode with the toucan thing, but I tossed this one in here. Unoe are also a genus of marine annelid worm.
Damn.
Anal lid worms?
Anal lid worms.
I'd never like to have those again.
My friend Mermy called out. He's like, dude, you guys talk about an animal fact every single episode. So
yeah.
I didn't realize, but I guess we do, don't we?
Well, pretty much. Now we've got two and possibly more. I can't see the future. I may have written in other facts that I forgot about.
That is honest to God something I spice up work from home mandatory meetings at work with. I always animal fact for meetings at work.
Hell yeah.
We also know that griffins need a round of applause, too. That's another thing you learn.
Yep,
yes,
that is true.
Yep. Clean water, no fruit, and applause is how you have a healthy griffin.
Clean water, or milk. Cow's milk is
or milk. Yeah.
They can handle dairy,
and a huge fucking litter box. that lower cat half is big, but they have like bird poop, which is all liquidy and gross, so it's way harder to clean up.
Yeah,
well, not in the litter box.
No, litter boxes aren't that great. I mean, mine's cheap.
I mean, litter boxes
take.
Litter boxes are pretty good for cleaning up liquid waste. Like, that's kind of their thing.
So, after drinking from the Unoe, Beatrice tells Dante that God is in outer space and it's time to fly. She is going to guide him now through the nine celestial spheres of heaven, to the Empyrean where God lives, bringing us into Dante's Paradiso finally. Now, this is like more of a historical thing here. Dante knew that the Earth was round, but his understanding of the solar system was less scientifically accurate, so we give him some credit where credit is due for the 1300s. In Paradiso, the solar system is described as being geocentric, with several concentric spherical layers surrounding the Earth like a jawbreaker candy or like an onion. So everything is like a shell sphere around the Earth, which is at the center of this geocentric model.
It's like cross-sectional of a parfait.
Parfait's maybe the most delicious thing on the whole damn planet.
It was Copernicus that discovered the Earth revolved around the sun, right? Which was in the 16th century, I believe.
So. I don't know. I have some planet facts later. I know that.
Yeah. So to your point, Dante's credit, no one really believed. Like, people had probably speculated before, but I'm pretty sure it was Copernicus that proved the Earth revolved around the sun and not vice versa.
Like 400 years after he was dead, too, so.
Yeah.
After Dante was dead, that is. Yeah.
Well, 16th century, so the 1500s.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
200 years.
200. I don't know about you guys, but when I wake up, the sun comes up on one side and it sets on the other. It's going around us, so.
When I wake
you know
up,
what? That's,
and
no,
I know
that's a compelling
I'm gonna
argument, Jamie.
When I wake up and I know I'm gonna be the man that revolves, that has the sun revolve around him and his Earth.
Yep.
As the Pretender's saying.
Yeah. this model of the solar system was based on the one put forth by Claudius Ptolemy at some point between the years 100 and 170 while he was alive. He was just like, yeah, it's like an onion. We're at the middle. That's where everything goes.
The onion model of the universe.
Yes. The Shrek himself, I believe, is a small universe.
Oh, the universe is Shrek.
Yes, exactly.
Is the hypothesis.
Yeah. Shrek is love, Shrek is life. Mm-hmm.
The first celestial sphere is just the moon. So their first stop after leaving the planet Earth is to go to the moon. Whilst exploring the moon, Beatrice explains to Dante that the craters on the moon's surface is some kind of optics experiment, where he's just like, well, why are some parts dark and others not? And she's like, actually, it's about light and all this other crazy shit. So she goes off on this random science tangent, gives him a bunch of trivia about optics.
I do, especially for the 1300s, kind of like, I guess, the later end of the Dark Ages, where like science was really took a backseat to religion for a good 500 years. And just to be like, I'm writing this like epic poem about my religion, Christianity, and you know what? I'm going to throw some fucking science that I know, having never looked at a telescope before in my life. Like,
it's basically the 14th century equivalent of like a Snapple fact.
Yeah.
She just throws out there when they go to the moon.
Yeah. And the stars are holes in the blanket that we tuck the earth. Goodbye. Yeah. Good night.
We'll get into that. We'll get into that part.
Oh, good.
The souls who live on the moon are the inconstant, meaning changing or variable, people who lack the virtue of fortitude and abandon their vows.
My doctor told me I'm inconstant.
I don't think that's what he said, Jamie. You might be on the wrong medication. You might want to call him back.
Okay.
So here they meet the soul of a woman named Picarda, who was the sister of one of Dante's childhood friends, Foris Donati. Picarda died shortly after being forcibly removed from her convent. Doesn't sound like it was her fault, but she lives on the moon now, which is better than hell.
Sounds pretty rad, honestly.
Cool. Yeah.
Can I ask if we're going to meet Dante's childhood friend, Mr. Donati, somewhere in heaven?
No.
Can I get that spoiler? Because I would have loved that. It was like, yeah, my good friend from childhood, he's up in heaven, but his bitch sister, she's living on the moon now.
Don't you worry. Dante's Mary Sue tendencies are on full display the deeper they go into outer space.
Okay, so good. Good.
So one of the things that I find funny here is there's like this commonality of why I chose these two people that he meets. The other woman that he meets on the moon is Constance of Sicily. She was the Empress of the Holy Roman Empire as of 1191. And if you ask Dante, she was also forcibly removed from her convent and made to marry Henry VI. The commonality between these two moon nuns is that they had their vows broken by force. Beatrice, however, explains that your vows are a contract with God and are way too important to be broken, therefore you should not comply with force, meaning she just kind of, it's like a weird endorsement of martyrdom.
Yeah, should have martyred yourself, idiot. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Just like, oh, fuck you. I guess you're just a coward. Now you have to live on the moon, which, not that bad, honestly.
I mean, the moon sounds kind of boring, honestly. Like, yeah.
Loophole, though. Always a loophole with every contract. Every contract has a good loophole, some fine print with God. If keeping your vows endorses a greater evil, then it's all cool to break your previous vows. This is how Beatrice rationalizes Agamemnon's sacrifice of his daughter during the Trojan War, which has come up a lot in the comedy.
Gold medal, good.
Yeah, exactly. So gold medal, Dante's favorite thing, Pope. Silver medal, Trojan War, and he does
Agamemnon.
Not. He does not like the Greeks in that story.
Agamemnon going to war because his cousin's wife left him for a Trojan or something?
For Paris? I don't fucking know exactly.
That's justified, yeah.
But remember, like, in fraud in hell, which is like the second to last layer, counselors of fraud are like the two guys who told someone to build the Trojan horse. So he's not a fan of the horse side of that fight.
But he is a fan of the fact that they went to war, just not the fact that they... Well, he's forgiving of Agamemnon, because Agamemnon was the Greeks, like they were the ones that invaded Troy. And so Agamemnon was the one that ordered the horse built, but I guess it was just the people that counseled him.
Was Agamemnon not in Troy?
No,
I'm not.
No, Agamemnon.
In a while.
Agamemnon in the Brad Pitt movie was the. He's played by the guy from X-Men 2. He's the Greek ruler. He's the one who sends Achilles to go defeat the Trojans.
Okay, that's odd.
That's where the saying comes from, right? Like, don't look a Trojan horse in the mouth.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Greek soldiers, they'll stab you in the eyes.
Don't look Agamemnon in the mouth. That's where the expression comes from.
You know, when you get a cheap Agamemnon from some farmer, you know. Now, the second sphere is Mercury. They're not in order of distance from Earth, which is strange, but like as things rotate, I guess they get farther and closer to each other.
Yeah, that's when they say... So, like...
Even in this geocentric model, however, it seems to be, in my head, like how he explains, like, they go to the moon and then Mercury next.
Pluto
and the next farthest planet only get close to each other, like, every 350-something years.
So, yeah.
Like, just based on their rotation and their speed, right? Like,
since in the time Pluto was discovered... And to the time that Pluto was named not a planet, it had done like a quarter of a year Pluto year. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's funny you say that because I had a Pluto fact later on in the script. It still has not completed an entire rotation around the sun because a Plutonian year takes 247 years.
Yeah, and it was discovered in the '70s. Pluto, like
in the '30s.
There you go. Huh.
It'll be back where we found it in 2178, I believe. It's written. I wrote it down later on.
Yeah. The only thing that lives on Pluto is toucans, actually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Animal fact 3 for 3.
It's where Fruit Loops come from.
Yep. That's why Pluto doesn't have any rings.
Mr. Sam
ate them all.
Mr. Sam brings us to brings them all to Earth for us to eat and the children.
So, the second sphere is Mercury, and is reserved for the ambitious, and those who want to tan real fucking fast.
Yeah, no kidding.
Okay. People here did good in life, however they did good in pursuit of fame, thus were deficient in justice. So Mercury is entirely overtaken by the light of the sun, so too is this celestial sphere by the light of God. Okay?
So, I think it's for people that want to tan really well or tan never, because Mercury is tidally locked to the sun. So there's one side of it that is always facing the sun, and there's the other side of it which is never facing the sun, so it's just wicked cold because it has no atmosphere.
Yeah, doesn't Mercury have this weird border where the temperature drops like 500 degrees Celsius over the course of like a few miles?
It'd be like 600 whatever, you know, it'd be super hot on the side facing the sun, and it'd be super cold on the side not facing the sun.
Wild.
Pretty wild.
On Mercury, the pair run into Emperor Justinian, the Byzantine emperor from 527 to 565.
Okay.
Personal fact, he is known as Saint Justinian in the Eastern Orthodox Church, which is my church, or would be, if I believed in God. It's the one I was baptized into the Greek Orthodox Church, which is Eastern Orthodox, along with the Ruskies and the rest of Eastern Europe.
You wear your crucifix?
Oh, yeah. But that's because I don't have any fingernails. I just can't get the fucking thing off. The latch is too tiny. he introduces himself as Emperor Justinian, showing Dante that he kept his memories, but obviously his rank means nothing in paradise. Justinian speaks to Beatrice and Dante saying, "Wow, Dante, you sure are right about everything."
Well, that's an unfamiliar thread for this story.
Yeah, exactly.
So far, it's all been people naysaying Dante.
I think that's a weird move to introduce yourself as an emperor. If you're an emperor, just introduce yourself as yourself, and your like attitude and everything should show that you're an emperor, right?
That's why you'll never be an emperor, James.
Yeah,
the one and only reason why you'll never be an emperor.
You got to walk the walk. You don't just talk the talk.
No, right? They got to be egoists, man. Every emperor in the history of time has been like, "I'm the fucking emperor, dude. Me, emperor. You don't call me by my name. You call me emperor." Okay.
Okay. So bow, I guess I'm mistaking what makes a good leader with an emperor.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. That's also why you'll never be a regular politician. But I mean, that shows his ambition, right? Like, he's lacking injustice, so even in heaven he's still like, "Oh yeah, me, you know, moments from God, living on Mercury next to the sun, and I'm Emperor Justinian, by the way."
by the way,
he also refers to the French as yellow lilies.
Huh. I mean,
unfirm flowers.
We were just in they're yellow flowers. We were just in rural Quebec, and there was a ton of lilies. But
yeah, if you actually Google yellow lilies, I don't know if it's just because we're in Canada, but apparently they're called the Canada lily. And yeah, it's the wild yellow lily, the meadow lily, or the Canada lily. So yeah. I guess we're the yellow bellies now.
Now, from Mercury, where do you think we're going?
Mars?
Nope.
Going Jupiter. To Venus.
Jupiter.
Venus, baby.
The hottest planet in the solar system.
Venus is for the lovers. Yes. I mean, it's still sunny and hot in Paradiso, but there are no lakes of molten lead, sadly. So he missed that one. Venus is for the lovers, not the gross weird ones in Lust or the lovers in Purgatory. The good lovers, apparently, mark in brackets.
Chaste, faithful lovers.
Yeah, I guess. An apparent personal friend is here on Venus, and the shockingly not Italian or already famous dead poet, Charles Martel of Anjou. Charles established the Hungarian House of Anjou, ruled Croatia, and then died of plague in 1295.
Good for him.
Yeah. He was 23, got in a lot of good work.
Wow, yeah, he did a lot that time. Yeah. Guys, we're fucking 28. You're 29.
I know. I haven't established any kingdoms, and I've never even been to Croatia.
Yeah. Have you even given any thought to your progeny? Come on.
No, not really.
Who's going to rule in your stead? Should you catch the plague?
Take over lore boys.
Yeah. Peter's the daddy of lore boys.
Yeah. So Charles explains to Dante that society requires diversity to function, which likely meant slightly different kinds of Christians who all agree on the same stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So Charles of Anjou would totally be like in one of those Twitter bubbles where it's just a bunch of people who just like circle jerk and retweet themselves, like five, six people. Yeah. Also on Venus was one of the lovers of Sordello. Sordello, which was Samuel Beckett's favorite character, we meet in Purgatory. So if you want more information about him, listen to our Purgatorio episode. His lover, who is on Venus, is named Cunisa da Romano. And Dante had actually met her in real life in the house of Florentine philosopher Cavalcante da Cavalcanti. And then I noted here with an exclamation point, because I guess I was sleepy, James de Jamie.
With an exclamation point.
Yeah.
So is that person, de Romano, related to Ray?
Yeah,
all Ray probably Romano. One of the originals.
With Deborah or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, when you go back far enough, it's all Ray Romano.
Every Italian is Ray Romano.
I gotta say, I'm looking forward to Jamie's episode on the lore of the Everybody Loves Raymond sitcom.
Dude.
The multiverse, yeah.
Yep. It's got a lot of threads coming out of that one.
And then, finally, we have one more celebrity cameo on Venus. We meet Folquet de Marseille, who tells Dante that Florence was put on Earth by Satan, and that he planted the damned flower, the florin, which was their currency, and then money led to the corruption of the church. So, like, everybody is pretty in agreement so far up in heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
Who'd have thought?
Yeah. It's not the church's fault for taking the money. It's the money's fault for making the people of the church take it.
For existing? What?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The guns don't kill people. Bullets kill people.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So now we move past the shadow of the Earth to the fourth sphere, which is the sun.
What?
Here we've
okay,
got,
hold
yeah.
on. I really thought pinnacle would be sun. I thought that would be the last place we go.
No, it's the fourth sphere. The fourth celestial sphere now is the sun.
I gotta say, though, this is kind of telling that they kind of had some inkling of how close certain celestial bodies were. Like, the fact that they went Mercury, Venus, like, they just got those two backwards, right?
Yeah, and then the moon first, and then the sun, which I don't think is closer than Mars, as far as I know.
No, definitely not. No.
Yeah, no.
It goes Mercury, Venus, Earth, Mars. So Venus and Mars are the two closest planets to Earth. Like, it's closer than Mercury, for sure.
Yeah.
But it shows up in the sky way less, whereas Mercury shows up very often.
Right.
Like every couple weeks, Mercury will show up in the sky, depending on what latitude you're at. But
right. It's in retrograde all the time. I hear people talking about
how retrograde works is because, and Mars can be in retrograde too. But the thing about Mars is it's not visible when it's in retrograde because it's on the other side of us compared to the sun. So. When Mercury is in retrograde, you see it move backwards across the night sky. So if you're tracking all the stars and you see Mercury, it's moving in one direction. And then for a brief time, it's moving back the other way. And it's because it's orbiting around in a weird way. I won't be able to explain it coherently, but you can watch like diagrams that show you how like Mercury moves around the sun and it makes it appear as though it's moving backwards in the night sky. And that's what Mercury being in retrograde means.
But no, any dude, it's just the shutter speed on our eyes, like whenever you look at a car wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, whenever a camera films a helicopter and it looks like the rotors aren't moving at all.
I mean, you probably explained it slightly better than Dante. So, definitely. The sun represents the wise. This sphere is really ethereal and weird, consisting mostly of singing orbs of light. The first 12 orbs encountered, and we will not get into all of these people because it'd be way too much. The first 12 orbs are Thomas Aquinas, who we have talked about before. Yeah. Albertus Magnus, who probably invented condoms.
Dude, he sounds like a Chad, whoever he is.
Right? Yeah. Albertus Magnus.
The one square spirit of light is, yeah, yeah. is Albertus Magnus.
It's got a butt chin and everything.
Yeah. Yeah. Then we have Gratian, Peter Lombard, King Solomon, Dionysius the Areopagite, Orosius, Boethius, Isidore of Seville, Bede, which is just B-E-D-E. Beedy, yeah.
I don't know.
BD1. Richard of St. Victor, and this is my favorite one, Siger of Brabant.
But what's your name? That's somebody who snuck into heaven, right? Like, what's St. Peter at the gate, like, and your name?
Siger of Brabant.
sorry, what was that? Siger
of Brabant.
And just like St. Peter, nobody tells you this, but St. Peter is actually a very shy person. So he's just like, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. Just like scratching his name at the bottom of the ledger. Like,
rather than confront him about not being on the list, his one job.
Yeah.
Nobody tells you this, but if you just threaten St. Peter, they'll let you into heaven.
Or if you show up with like enough girls, because they have to keep the head count.
Yeah, they got to keep the head count. Because there's too many thirsty boys in heaven, because women are sinners. You know?
Well, yeah, dude, you've got hit, like Albertus Magnus and his whole crew of other ghost Chads are all up there. In the sun.
You got Albertus Magnus. You got Chadus Big Dickus. You got
whatever an Areopagite is. Right, like I said, I'm not going to get into these guys here. But Thomas Aquinas, who we talked about previously, talks to Dante and Beatrice the story of St. Francis of Assisi, who founded the Franciscan Order of Monks, mm-hmm. and is one of the most famous figures in all of Christianity. These are the like classic-looking monks, the bald heads, the brown robes. They're like poor by choice, those guys.
Yeah, good people.
Yeah, exactly. 12 more singing lights appear, one of which is St. Bonaventure. We have a Bonaventure station on the Montreal Metro. There is like a huge list of shit just named after Saint Bonaventure. He was a real person. He had a near-death experience as a child, and he believed that he was saved by the prayers of Saint Francis of Assisi, and then joined the Franciscan order in 1243. He studied in Paris and has a feast day on July 15th. So happy belated Bonaventure Day. Yeah.
That's my brother Cameron's birthday.
I didn't know. Happy birthday, Cam.
Yep.
Happy belated birthday, Cam. And also St. Bonaventure.
Yeah. I think Bonaventure will listen before Cam does.
Well, it's not Bonaventure's birthday, though. It's just his feast day.
It's his feast day, yeah.
True.
He then tells a story of St. Dominic, the patron saint of astronomers, which is fitting since we're out in space now.
Clearly Dante, as misguided as he was, like in hindsight 2020, he clearly had some sort of passion for astronomy and like the way the planets moved, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's always the classic, he's a pretty classic like intellectual of the time where they just like read and study everything because they're like one of 10 people on Earth who can even fucking read in the first place.
Exactly.
So
they've just got family money and the wealth gaps are like fucking unreal. So it's just like daddy left him some money. So he spends his whole life just fucking reading and philanthropizing or whatever. Like,
yeah. Getting kicked out of Florence.
Yeah.
So now they're hungry for a little bit more traditional sci-fi. So Dante and Beatrice finally go to Mars, which is home of the warriors of the faith.
Well, I was going to say, that's the Roman god of war, right?
So. Yeah, exactly. These are people who had enough fortitude to die for their cause, unlike the cowards on the moon.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
This is all of Elon Musk's factory workers that died.
That had to die to make your fucking Tesla.
To get him to Mars.
They're staging coups in Bolivia right now to like gain control of the lithium mines, and it's like everybody that dies defending those lithium mines is going to fucking Mars.
Gets to live on Mars. Yeah. So who happens to be here on Mars but Dante's great-great-grandfather, Cassiaguida Delgi Elise.
That's a mouthful.
That's a mouthful, yeah.
That literally sounds like somebody saying a name with a mouthful of spaghetti, okay?
Cassiaguida. Cassiaguida died in the Holy Land during the Second Crusade around 1148. Thankfully, he has a little bit of... He's like chatting with his great-great-grandson. He's just like, by the way, Florence is a shithole filled with cowardice liars. And Dante's just like, I can't believe you think that out here in space, granddad.
Yeah. You know what, person who really aligns with the way that I think and is somehow in heaven? I think the same way.
They are traitorous liars. You're right. Everybody in Florence. Now, also, so Cassiaguida is also like the in-text reason for the existence of the comedy, because while talking to Dante, he's just like, you should probably tell people about this crazy journey you went on. You've been taking notes, correct? Like, you wrote down some of the people you talked to in hell and purgatory, and you're going to tell them about heaven too, right? Yeah. So he's the reason the whole thing was written from the text.
He's the original Lore Boys canon?
Yeah, exactly.
Cassiaguida was like, Lore Boys canon, this all happened, right? And Dante was like, you know what? You're right.
Made the first knock knock joke or something like that.
Yeah. The first joke ever recorded, I want to say it's Sumerian, and it's has there ever been a woman who sat in her husband's lap and did not fart? That's the first ever joke. Who's there?
I looked it up. The first knock knock joke apparently was in it might have been from Macbeth in 1606.
Okay.
Oh.
Who knew?
I'm familiar,
Billy Shakes,
I'm familiar
at it
with
again.
Yeah, Billy Shakes. There we go. Coming
Billy Shakes.
Having a comeback.
Can't get away.
I'm knocking here.
Stupid. Dustin Hoffman. Other Martian warriors of Christ. Christ include Charlemagne, who apparently hated drunks, and Joshua, who was Moses' assistant, who then became leader of the Israelites when Moses died.
He's also a tree for hippies.
The Joshua tree. Yeah. Also, Judah from the story of Hanukkah is chilling on Mars.
Okay. I'm not
Judah
familiar.
Chris. Next, Judah. We travel to Judah. I had someone at my elementary school teach us the story of Hanukkah a few times during Hanukkah time. I don't really remember much of it. They had a lamp that burned for 8 days, and that was a miracle, so that's why they have 8 candles on the menorah, as far as I know.
I wish someone would tweet at me the story of Judah. I'm sure my girlfriend knows, honestly. I could probably go ask her.
gmail.com. Next, we're going to Jupiter, which is named after the Roman king of the gods.
To get more stupider.
Yes. Yeah, Dante specifically was just like, I need to get dumb now.
Got him.
I've been to Venus to get big penis. Now I gotta go Jupiter, get more stupider.
I didn't look up the Latin for that, but it's definitely in the text.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is what the classic literature would want us to read it in. Like, this is how it was meant to be.
I'm sure there isn't like a Harvard professor spinning in his fucking grave right now as we record.
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there writing their theses on Dante's Inferno that are stopping off to listen to the Lore Boys podcast to hear what we have to say on the subject.
Oh my God.
I hope so, honestly.
I mean, we are kind of the authority when you think about it.
How many other podcasts have covered this to this extent?
How many other people have talked about this? I mean, I don't think anyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found this old dusty tome.
We all know the theory of gravity, but we don't know where gravity comes from. And now we know it's Satan's balls.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, Jupiter's, again, very weird. It's not really like a physical realm, which I don't think he knew that it was not a solid object, but there's not like people here. they're like a football cheer squad. So like a bunch of souls, which appear as like bright lights, organize themselves to spell out Diligite Iustitium qui Judicatis Terram, which is old Italian for love justice, ye that judge the earth.
So they're just there going, give me a D. Give me an I.
Yeah.
Give me an L.
Yeah, D-I-L, exactly. Finally, the souls that form the M of Terram, which is the last letter in their saying, like, fuse together and form into a gigantic silver eagle embossed with gold, communicates telepathically with Dante.
Okay. Yeah. Now this is really become Dante, right? Like, he had a good D&D game with his friends, and he's decided to self-publish the book of the story of his D&D campaign.
Pretty much, yeah. So he speaks to the eagle for a little while. Now, there was one, like, aside, just on the Wikipedia page, of, like, sculptures of eagles around Europe are all in a similar position, and it's supposed to be the letter M from Terram, from this old Latin saying. So, like, if you look at an eagle, visually you're not going to visualize this, but if you take... draw a line from the tip of the feathers to the wrist of an eagle, and then down to like where its belly button would be, you can kind of overlay a letter M over a sculpture of an eagle.
Now, when you say wrist of an eagle, I was picturing a shoulder of an eagle.
No, because the wrists are where the feathers would point downwards from, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Then up, I just, and then...
Think of when you're drawing birds and you don't know how to draw very well. They all look like little M's.
I mean, when I do that, I just trace my hand and make a turkey.
Gobble, gobble, baby.
Yeah. If you ever want to spice up your sky, just make little M's and it looks like faraway birds.
Jamie really did paint a picture for me here, okay? Peter, you lost me when you started talking about wrists versus elbows. I don't know. Jamie, with his M's, got me. I get it.
Little,
I'm there.
Little
I'm,
seagulls. I'm here for it. On Jupiter, we come across Emperor Trajan, who was given by Thomas Aquinas back in Inferno as an example of a virtuous pagan, who absolutely, totally converted to Christianity before he died in 117 AD, unlike that idiot Virgil, who we miss and love very much, but we have since forgotten about because we swam through that river that wipes your memories.
Right.
Virgil backwards is Ligriv.
But he swam through the river that restored his good memories. Was Virgil not a good memory?
Apparently not.
He bathed in the milk of memory. The memory milk.
The memory milk. He went through the river Lecce, and he's sweaty now. So on the subject of Virgil, he was like, a Trojan that he wrote about in the Aeneid appears in heaven as well. This is Ripheus. Described as the most just Trojan, and he gets to come to Jupiter because he was apparently saved at the last minute by the Christian god himself after he was taken prisoner by the Greeks.
Okay.
For a second, I thought you were going to tell us the name of the Christian god, but it's just God, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just God with a capital G. Dang. So, Ripheus was saved by God from the Greeks during the Trojan War, and he's on Jupiter now as well for some reason. But again, this is a technically fictitious character from the Aeneid written by Virgil, and again Virgil has to stay in hell.
Yeah, well, I mean, that makes sense though. Mickey Goofy from the Mickey Mouse is going to be in heaven, but I'm not going there.
Which sphere?
Probably the lust sphere, I would think.
He's the only one who canonically has had sex. He's got a kid who looks like him.
Yeah, he's the virtuous lover. He's the
chilling on Venus.
Yeah.
Well, come here there, you pretty girl.
Gorge.
Venus sure is warm. I'm thinking good gorge. Hey there, Maxie.
So finally, the souls that formed the giant letter M and eagle speak as one and tell Dante of God's justice, which is frontier justice, because God is the rootinest tootinest cowboy.
Oh, for sure. God is just Yosemite Sam from the Looney Tunes. Big old beard and mustache. God is fucking six shooters. That's always been my image of God, I think, since I was a young child.
Yosemite Sam? wait a second. It is like an old biblical world. It's Yosemite. So he's probably one of the many sons of Judah who traveled with Moses during Exodus, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Explain some of the erratic behavior, like flood the earth or stuff like that. He fired from the hip, you know?
So, next celestial sphere, next celebrity cameo. The next sphere is Saturn, and this is for the contemplative and those who represent temperance. So this is where we get battered shrimp and all that shit.
Okay.
All right? Here we go. People who in life were beacons of self-restraint. Very boring at parties, but would likely not tell you about being vegan or the podcast they've been doing with their friends.
That's me. We're talking about me when we're talking about temperance. We're talking about me, right? We can all can all agree. Mr.
Totally.
Temperance over here.
So much self-restraint, drinking your beer on the podcast.
Mr. Tempe.
Mr. Tempura.
Yeah.
So here's where it kind of gets, again, strange. It's another, like, more and more ethereal the further away you get from Earth. On, in, or around Saturn, Dante and Beatrice speak to Peter Damian. Peter was born circa 988 AD in Ravenna, Italy, to a large but poor noble family, which for me, I found like kind of like an oxymoron because I thought nobility was a byproduct of wealth. But you
not
can
necessarily.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. You could be like have a lot of cars and a mansion and stuff, but they're all on lease and you got to. gotta pay for him.
Damien famously in debt.
So you can make YouTube videos and show off your cars and say how good you are at making money, and then people will pay you to like learn your method, but there is no method.
So you can, if you're wealthy enough, you can buy a title, which is you pay to become a noble person. So like it is kind of inherent, but you can lose all your money as the nobility.
Okay.
But,
so I guess that's what would have happened to Peter Damian's parents here.
Yeah, but if you're noble, presumably you own land, and if you own land, you can collect taxes. So presumably you're never out of wealth because you always have a workforce kind of thing.
Right.
But it would happen.
They didn't seem to have much because after both his parents died, his older brother set him to work on a pig farm. So the workforce on this noble farmstead was the nobility themselves. Another one of his brothers, Damianus, took pity on him and figured that education was better than pig farming. And if it was like the year 1000, I would probably agree. He would have been like 12, 13 in the year 1000. And like being ankle deep in pig shit is probably more hazardous to your health than drinking water in at this time, right?
Drinking water at that time was really dangerous. So,
but imagine wallowing in pig shit.
I mean, it's just on your feet. I don't know.
I don't know, man. He washed his hands. What if he scratches his foot? Takes off his gross sandals or whatever.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah.
I don't know if you wear sandals to. I guess when did they make boots?
When does boots be invented?
It's not
okay, Blueble.
Where's the good Dr. Martin on this?
So. Thankfully, this was a good choice because Peter was an absolute legend. And by the age of 25 in 1013-ish, he was already a renowned teacher. And now he's up on Saturn. Dante places him on Saturn as a symbol of temperance due to the fact that in 1035, he gave up the luxurious monasteries in Cluny, France, and became a hermit. Thankfully, up here in the celestial spheres, news that Florence was a whack shithole had reached Peter Damian's dead ears too. So he knew as well. You know, like people are saying that our radio signals are going to go out into space and like aliens will discover that at some point. The first thing aliens are going to find out from us is the fact that Florence is the worst place on Earth.
I mean, our radio signals do that.
Yeah. Also on Saturn, Beatrice gets hotter.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's groovy, right?
Can I also just say I really hope. So Dante has messed up the order of a few planets so far, and I really hope he messes up the order of the last two planets, and Uranus is the pinnacle of Paradiso.
Well, obviously we'll be getting to that next.
I suspect
Our sphere of like expanding radio, though, like the first thing that's going to reach the aliens is like back in... When was radio invented?
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's like...
Marconi was the guy who invented it. But
try morphine. Give it to your kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what it's going to say. Yeah.
Baby brand, baby cocaine. Put, put cocaine in your baby's mouth.
Gerber's. It's great for your babies.
Yeah, Gerber baby cocaine. Now, the reason that Beatrice gets hotter is not just because Dante's self-insert is hanging out with his dead girlfriend. It represents the added insight regarding the truth of God, basically. So she gets hotter.
Oh, the closer they get to God.
Yeah.
The closer to God, the hotter the babe.
Hotter your babes. Look at them gans. That's a faithful woman right there. Now, we obviously kind of alluded to this just now. What do you think the next sphere is?
Well, I want to say, I want to say Neptune, because I know it goes Saturn, Uranus, Neptune, but I want it to go Saturn, Neptune, Uranus, because I want it to end on Uranus.
It's going
to
be a fully stocked Radio Shack.
Yeah.
Nobody would believe that.
It's
not even
the source by Circuit City is the next. Okay.
So, we modern men, at time of writing, with our ignorant future brains, may think that it would be Uranus that would follow Saturn, as that's the order, or even Neptune, if you wanted to guess that he probably got it wrong. The comedy being written in the 1300s means the rest of the known solar system is missing.
Oh. Okay.
Uranus was not officially discovered until 1781. Way Neptune later. Was 1846, and we discussed already earlier, Pluto was in 1930. Now that all that science is out of the way, we can move on with Paradiso. After Saturn, Dante enters the realm of the fixed stars on a giant golden ladder.
So the Milky Way.
Sort of. He it's does the mention the Milky blanket. Way.
The Leche River is where we are, finally.
It's more like the splattering. It's like splattered milk up at the sky, because the fixed stars... They could tell that, like, planets since the sun and the moon could move, so they're the non-fixed stars. Yeah. The fixed stars themselves, like constellations, shit like that, they didn't really know that they moved, so they just assumed there was just a giant black shell around everything with stars on it.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Then they climb up from Saturn on a giant golden ladder to the fixed stars. Faith, hope, and love are represented here.
Oh, they were at the carriage. Surrounding Beatrice.
Yes, exactly. Well, I mean, those women represented that directly. This is more of a allegorical thing. These three women are not up here themselves, because those women are in the Garden of Eden, which is still on Earth. They're actresses. They're not real.
Those are the understudies in the Garden of Eden. And here's the real deal. Yeah.
Yeah. So Dante turns around on the ladder as he exits the known solar system and has like a Carl Sagan pale blue dot moment. He describes the Earth as small and scrawny, but he kind of approves and misses it.
Okay.
So he sees the scale of the rest of the celestial spheres and looks back at Earth and is just like, wow, maybe my home isn't so bad if Florence was wiped off the face of the Earth.
Yeah. If it just wasn't for Florence.
If it just wasn't for Florence. Now, this is where the saints, like the big dick saints are. So among the stars, he meets... the Virgin Mary, and finally we come to Saint Peter, who has a cheeky test.
Okay, he was the rock.
What?
Saint Peter was the rock.
Oh
which Jesus built his church.
Yeah,
it was Dwayne Saint Peter the Rock Johnson.
So Saint Peter asked Dante what faith is and if he has it. Dante's character Dante, that he wrote about himself, has the right answer. However, he uses an argument from Augustine to say that the Bible is true and that the Catholic Church's rise from humble beginnings is a miracle in itself, and that is why he has faith. Okay. St. Peter's just like, or the fictionalized version of St. Peter in Dante's book is just like, wow, Dante, you got it. That's good enough for me.
Dante, you sure are smart and good looking. Boy, your wife, girlfriend, young child is very good looking as well.
Even hotter than the last time after you guys went through Saturn.
Yeah.
you gotta have faith. George Michael,
1300s.
Yeah. 1317.
Yeah. George Michael, Limp Bizkit.
You gotta have faith. Well, here's another cameo here from our own podcast. St. James asked Dante if he has hope. However, Hot Beatrice vouches for Dante to totally confirm that he has hope, and or just pushes her new, like, space boobies together. And then St. James is just like, I've been up in space a long time, boys. I'm just going to accept that answer. Just, like, zipping around the stars.
Boy, I can't wait to get to St. Ethan.
The next guy to test him is St. John. St. John asks Dante if he has love. Dante states that his understanding of love comes from his experience on the mountain of Purgatory, where he learns that all sin is deficient love.
Okay, you could have said John said, "What is love?" And Dante said, "Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more."
That's true. I did escape that one.
All right, actually, let's re-record, guys. We can start fresh.
Let's take it from the top.
Scrap it. It's all pop music from the 80s. So to us, the reader, this means that Dante is using his experiences in a book he is also and will also write to explain that he learned lessons from himself. Right?
You're right.
So
this really is the original Circle Jerk. Like,
yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the original anime, considering his magical girl sidekick just keeps getting hotter the further they get away into their adventure.
Oh, yeah. Take that, Eastern Orthodox, am I right? Far Eastern Orthodox.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think that's right at all.
Far.
And Laura says she's over 1,000 years old.
So. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, exactly. Totally okay.
She died as an adult. She did die after she was 18. So even if not...
Oh, that's rare for the time.
Also, there's no way there was those laws at the time.
No, there wasn't. Due to the bright saint lights, Dante briefly goes blind before being healed by Beatrice, who uses secondary divine light to heal his eyeballs.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you got a light burn. Here, take my light. Like, heals him.
Yeah. It's just like, oh no, you burned your hand. Let me pour some boiling water on it. He's like, new
have
pain.
Some, have
thank
some
you.
Fire to heal you.
So following the crossfire question period, St. Peter, unprompted, tells Dante that Pope Boniface VIII is a bastard and he hates him because of simony.
Okay.
St. Peter's just drinking a margarita in the corner. Hey, you know that guy? Fucking asshole. Like, we're talking about something, dude.
Fuck him and his stupid sick sequence. 1, 1, 2, 3, 4. Why? It just keeps going up. Doesn't make any sense.
So,
day, it was 1, 2, 3, 4. This guy's got to reinvent the wheel.
This guy's got to come out of this fucking Fibonacci sequence. Hmm?
So, we talked about Boniface and simony in Inferno, because at the time, in Fraud, there is like a burning pope in a pit, and Boniface is still alive when this is being written, but Dante guarantees us that he's going to hell accepting bribes, basically.
Not only Dante, but Peter himself guaranteed it, so that's a word you can trust. Don't take Dante's word for it. Take Peter's word that Dante wrote.
Throws his hands up. He's just like, I heard it. It's a quote.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the spirit of St. Peter turns red because he is so angry about bad popes.
Okay. So, and this is an interesting point because this is something that I thought was a much more recent thing, but red being bad or angry. I would have thought that was a much more recent invention than the 1300s.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, cardinals wear red, and Dante is usually depicted as wearing like a red robe. So, but yeah, he turns
they're
red.
They're not angry. Yeah.
Anger. Yeah. Anyway, if you want to listen to, if you want more about Boniface and Fraud, we got an Inferno episode, baby.
Peter, Dante does wear red in like every photo. How'd you know that?
I've spent fucking 20 hours doing research on this.
Now, Jamie,
one picture of him.
Jamie, hold on. Are you looking at a picture of a red macaw? Because it's a very common mistake to make when you're looking up pictures of Dante to actually looking at a picture of a parrot. And parrots,
it's
they
got
talk
a big hook nose.
They talk very much like humans. And some of them have red feathers. So it's very hard to tell.
Actually, I wasn't looking at either. I was looking at James the Hedgehog and writing in anyone's name, the Hedgehog, on the internet, and that's what I was looking at.
Oh, okay. Good.
By the way, we've already talked about it, but you guys can do that too. Write your name, the Hedgehog, and there'll be a bio. Check that out.
It's a nightmare. Safe search only.
Darnell the Hedgehog.
Yeah. So now we're on the ninth sphere, and this is the end of the physical universe. This is called the Primum Mobile, and this is where angels live. It is moved directly by God, because gravity is for pagans.
True.
From where he is with Beatrice, Dante can see God as a bright point of light surrounded by nine rings of angels, which is based on the hierarchy of angels, the holiest being at the center. So the closer to God, the stronger and more holy the angel. And then the angels get kind of shittier the further away you get, but they're still angels, right? I'm not going to get into all of them. Like, an episode about the hierarchy of angels is probably an hour and a half long in itself. I would probably love to do that, because researching all this old Catholicism has been really cool.
This is the Newtonian model of the angel.
Yeah, exactly. So at the center of the ring are the seraphim, which are the strongest angels, and they're usually depicted as like golden beings of light with six wings. There are some other ones, like some of them are just like interlocking wheels covered in eyeballs. That's apparently an angel, something like that. It's all
And to me, I had it in my mind as like that was the biblical depiction of angels. Was they were like these like otherworldly, like Lovecraftian beings that were just like horrific, but also very holy, apparently.
Yeah, well, like there are humanoid angels that are just like people in robes with wings, but they're archangels and regular angels, so they're the eighth and ninth ring on the way out. And then you've got stuff like cherubs, which are not the cute little babies. Cherubs are apparently six-winged, multi-faced monsters that are just also covered in eyes. So it's all very strange. Like I said, angel episode one day.
Dante's angels. It's Charlie's angels, but Dante's angels.
Right. Oh yeah, Cameron Diaz plays a interlocking wheel of eyes and light. And, you know, that's a real breakout role.
You got that wrong. She's all legs.
Now, while traveling through the Primum Mobile and observing all these terrifying looking angels, Beatrice takes a little bit of time to the side to talk shit about preachers of Dante's day. So,
okay, of course.
There's never anything too interesting to see out here on our way to heaven that we can't just stop and bitch for a while.
Yeah, that's it. We're never so busy going on this soul-searching journey to stop and complain about Florence and how shitty it is and all the people that live in Florence.
Just because we're hurtling through space doesn't mean things have gotten any better down there. Ascending beyond the realm of existence now, Dante enters the Empyrean. And since Dante invented... Oh, excuse me, I said that already. I fucked this up. There's a typo here. Once they enter the Empyrean and leave the physical universe, Beatrice gets hotter one more time.
Oh, now she's nice.
The hottest.
The hot basically. Is over 9,000.
Boo!
Okay. not a big DBZ fan in the house. I get it.
Goku already dumped him that one time, and he's really freaked up about it.
What Peter? Peter, what if I said Beatrice had got her last Pokemon evolution? Then you'd be a fan.
Oh, that's way more my thing. That's my childhood anime. So after Beatrice gets hotter, Dante is enveloped in light, making him fit to see God, and is carried up to a gigantic rose that symbolizes divine love. Angels apparently like fly around it like bees, which is from the actual text. That's how he describes them. And Beatrice takes her place on the petals. Since she has represented theology this whole time, and now he's about to meet God, she can just relax. She's just like, my allegory is done. I'm going to take a seat because now I'm just ridiculously sexy. Dante doesn't need me anymore. Dante gets one last ride, though, with Saint Bernard, the booze dog.
The dog,
Yeah, exactly. Bernard of Clairvaux was a French abbot and influencer in the revitalization of the Benedictine monks. He was born around 1090, but more importantly for Dante, he was a huge supporter and recruiter for the Second Crusade, where Cassiaguida, Dante's great-great-grandfather, earned his property on Mars.
Right, yeah.
So it's all very, you know, thank God that everybody up in heaven, thank God literally, I guess, in this case, everybody up in heaven that's important to me specifically is here, and we're all working together for the exact same goal. And it's talking shit about Florence.
That's what heaven's supposed to be about, right? You're all surrounded by the people you love.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, this is a very Christian story, I gotta say, from the Christians that I know.
St. Bernard explains predestination, the idea that all events have been willed by God, and prays to the Virgin Mary on Dante's behalf, and then Dante comes face to circle with God himself up in the Empyrean.
Yeah. What's he look like? Is it the guy with the guns?
He's a circle, yeah.
it's a much weirder interpretation of Yosemite Sam than I'm used to, but it's still, you can see how it's still inspired by Chuck Jones at the very least, so I'll get into the description in a moment. Dante, having been purged of sin, gone blind, had his sight restored, is well beyond closing his eyes in the presence of angels like he was in Purgatorio. God existing outside the physical world is described as something equally impossible. He is three equally sized circles of light that occupy the same space at the same time, representing all at once in the same area the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Within these circles, Dante can make out like the human silhouette form of Christ, and then the comedy ends with Dante trying to figure out how these circles fit together and how the human form of Christ fits with the circle of the Son, that's S-O-N. However, regarding this knowledge, Dante says, that was not a flight for my wings. Cool. And that's it. That's the
God
end.
Is a multidimensional being.
He's a bunch of rings of light that all sit together.
God is a vampire.
So that's it. That's the Divine Comedy. We did it. We started on a shitty hill in a dark forest, where we were accosted by a she-wolf, a lion, and a leopard, and now we're outside of existence, looking at a silhouette of Jesus in a beam of light.
We went down for a while, we pivoted on Satan's balls, and here we are.
It's an interesting...
Facing Cameron Diaz. the angelic horror that is Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, so we went all the way down to the deepest depths of hell, then all the way up to the highest heights of heaven. And in only 3 hours. Wow, that was pretty good, guys.
And we left the universe itself. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's it. I had a lot of fun researching this. I like the complete madness that Paradiso devolves into, of like dancing orbs of light forming into giant bronze eagles or silver eagles rather, and like telling Dante psychically about the rule of God and shit. It's just like, okay, man.
But for anyone, I guess, that listens to our Dante's episode that doesn't like our video game episodes, this really reminds me, like the whole through arc of Dante's Inferno really reminds me of our previous episode on Kid Icarus, the video game, because it's just so like off the walls bonkers at times. But it's because Kid Icarus was clearly written by somebody who lives in the 14th century and just doesn't understand how things in modern day work. Like, I don't know.
So I have been your host and, worthless pagan guide, Peter O'Donohue. You can find me at Pete O'Donohue on Twitter, or at Lore Boys Podcast on Instagram, or theloreboys.com. Ethan, if I wanted to, hang out with you, but you weren't as hot as you would potentially become, how would I do that?
If I was just hot enough, you know, not too hot, not too cold, you could reach me on the Goldilocks Twitter at Ethan the Dead Man. If you wanted to leave the show a review saying very hot, not too cold, please do on iTunes or whatever app you guys use. It super, super, super helps us out. Find new listeners, find more people to grow the community. As we mentioned earlier, we have an email that you guys can send emails to, contact@loreboys.com, or you can go to loreboys.com/about and find all our contact info there, all our Twitters, all our Discord, all our everything. Please come join the Discord, come hang out with us. And Jamie?
Yeah, my name's James. I've been one third of your hosts, and you can find me mostly on the Discord. That's where we play the game. So like Ethan said, loreboys.com/about, or just go to loreboys.com and click on that little about section, and there's a way to get into our Discord. I want to see more people there, so come hang out.
And anybody who wants to support the show financially, we, of course, have a Patreon, patreon.com/theloreboys. And if you like the show and want to support but don't quite trust Patreon, then why not reach out to us at Loreboys Prime? Our Loreboys Prime is something we've had since day one, where we offer you guys some of our cool inventions in return for your hard-earned florins. So you guys know we are inventors first and foremost, and believe it or not, we have invented the sexy rare candy, the thing that can evolve you from what you are now into the sexier Saturn-like version of yourself. So just send us your shipments, and we'll send you a packet of rare candies. We'll send you one evolution per thing. Your stats won't go up. You will have to, but just from a vain point of view, from a purely aesthetic point of view, you'll be much sexier than you were before.
Yeah. Ethan, it's weird, 'cause Ethan designed them and I ate mine and I stayed the same. So,
and you're already perfect.
Yeah, I guess.
Honestly, how they all work is they just make anyone look more like Jamie. So just whoever eats it, you'll just get one step closer to Jamie. Then if you eat two, everyone ends up as Jamie. The second one is there. So you end up, first one gets you halfway there. The second one gets you the rest of the way there.
Our personal James Miller is already from beyond the prime of mobile. So he's already a sexy. He's a sexy he's going to get.
He is just a mass of flesh covered in eyes and wheels. So
yeah,
as angelic as they come. And I think that constitutes
Lore Boys.
A comedy out.
Lore Boys Divine Comedy.
Oh.
Outside of the known universe?
Yeah.
Lore Boys out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.